Aloha, Divine Soul. You're listening to the Uplifting Podcast. This is your space for cosmic conversations. I'm your host, Randy Lee, 6-2 sacral generator with the left angle cross of cycles 2. My mission is to make human design and gene keys accessible to anyone who desires to live more fully as their true self. I'm passionate about discovering the nuances within these systems and using them as tools for personal and collective liberation rather than limitation. In this season of the podcast, we're diving deep into the meaning of personal destiny through the lens of the right angle incarnation cross. Each week, I interview guests with different incarnation crosses to uncover the nuances within their design and how these four main gates manifest in their life and color their purpose. If you're a human design nerd like me who loves learning about the system through hearing others' lived experiences, then this podcast is for you. Let's fall more in love with ourselves as we explore the magic within our differentiation. Aloha, Divine Souls, and welcome back to the Uplifting Podcast. This season, we're going to be exploring right angle incarnation crosses. The first incarnation cross that we're going to be discussing this season is the right angle cross of the Sphinx. I wanted to kick off this season with the cross of the Sphinx because it plays an important role in setting the direction for the gates along the wheel. The Rave Mandala is separated into four quarters, which each contain 16 gates. Each of the four quarters begins with one of the gates from the cross of the Sphinx. So the cross of the Sphinx includes gates 1, 2, 7, and 13, which are all located in the G center. This is another special aspect of this incarnation cross, is that all four gates are located in the same center in the body graph. This incarnation cross and the cross of the vessel of love, which includes the other four gates in the G center, so gate 10, 15, 25, and 46, they are the only two incarnation crosses that have all four gates coming from the same center. So you're not going to see another incarnation cross other than the cross of the Sphinx and the cross of the vessel of love that have all four gates located in the same center. With the cross of the Sphinx, which, like I mentioned, includes gates 1, 2, 7, and 13, those gates in the G center are all about direction. And these gates set the foundation for the 15 other gates that will follow it in the quarter. So the first quarter begins with gate 13, the second quarter begins with gate 2, the third quarter begins with gate 7, and the fourth quarter begins with gate 1. The 15 hexagrams that follow on the wheel will all have the same bottom two lines of the hexagram. So all 16 gates in a particular quarter will have the same base binary, which is the bottom two lines of the hexagram. This incarnation cross plays an important role in setting the direction of the Rave Mandala, setting the direction for life itself. So the cross of the Sphinx blends the energies of the listener, of leadership, self-expression, and direction that leads the individual towards collective leadership and individual creativity. For those with this incarnation cross, your life is marked by the themes of creativity, understanding others deeply, guiding groups effectively, and following your own unique inner direction. You thrive in environments where you can express yourself creatively and authentically while being of service to others through listening and effective guidance. It's important for you to have the freedom to follow your own path and unique direction in life. Gate 13 is the gate of the listener. This gate carries the energy for the collective sharing of secrets, listening to others, and gathering wisdom through the experiences of others and reflecting on the past. Gate 7 is known as the gate of leadership, and this gate embodies the energy for leading the collective into the future and is the catalyst for a new direction that is based on logical understanding. Gate 1 is the gate of self-expression or creativity, and this gate embodies the energy for the expression of creativity, the manifestation of individuality, and the drive to bring unique creations to life. Finally, gate 2 is known as the gate of direction, and it signifies the potential to find your unique direction or path in life. This week, I have the pleasure of talking with Karen Scholey, who's a 1-4 splenic projector with the Cross of the Sphinx 2, to talk about her experience with this incarnation cross and what it means to her. Karen is a human design guide, Reiki master, and integrative wellness coach. Her body-based approach to nervous system health integrates polyvagal theory, human design, nutrition, somatics, and energy work. She's been in her experiment since 2020 and has the channel of the prodigal, wavelength, and acceptance. So without further ado, let's get into my conversation with Karen. Welcome to the podcast, Karen. So excited for you to be here today and for our conversation.
I'm excited to be here. Yeah, I think this incarnation cross project that you're working on, it's fascinating. It's a piece that I totally did not understand at the beginning of my experiment.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's why I wanted to create this series, because I feel like there's not a lot of information out there about incarnation crosses. And when I heard about mine, there was like this generic description, and it didn't really land for me until after I had really started to live it. So that kind of leads me into my first question. I would love to hear what the Cross of the Sphinx means to you and how that understanding has transformed as you've been in your experiment.
Yeah. Well, the Sphinx Cross, you know, when I first came across my human design chart, that was like the first thing I saw at the top was RAX Sphinx 2. I'm like, what? And just like you're describing, like I found generic descriptions about it. And like what I knew about the Sphinx in terms of like pop culture or, you know, mythology, like I had something to kind of hook into, but I did not understand like what that meant as an incarnation cross, and certainly like what that meant as personal destiny or, you know, the storyline or plot line of my life. Like I totally didn't get it. Once I started studying Richard Rudd, actually, I felt like I got a grasp on those four gates in a way that I could actually like sink my teeth into and understand. Cause even like the Ravi Ching keynotes, I recognized myself in some of it, but it was still kind of confusing. And I didn't really understand like, why is this the Sphinx? And to be honest, I mean, I still kind of don't get why Ra called it that, even though the astrology matches up to it. But in terms of like a directional or like orientation kind of cross, it does make sense to me. And in like the most kind of silly and mundane ways, like in 3D reality, I'm constantly being asked for directions. It's basic stuff like that. Like I'll be on the street in a city that I've never been to, and someone will walk up to me and be like, hey, do you know where blah, blah, blah is? And like my whole life, I was like, why do people look at me and think that I know where I'm going? Like I have no idea. Or I do, and you know, but so like literal direction, like I'm good with that. But in terms of having an impact on people's lives, it's been harder to kind of wrap my head around that. The most recent example is someone that I met who had been thinking about an idea, like a big project that he wanted to work on. We went on a date and he told me about it. And then the following week, he was like, I'm actually starting to get things moving on this project. And part of it is like, I felt like I needed to be accountable when I said out loud to you that I was doing this big project. And I was like, oh, that's so cool. And that was like a year ago. And I've been watching him build this thing and watching him take on this new trajectory in his life. And so that's kind of one of those examples where it's like, I just literally meet somebody and then something will happen where, you know, I'm not trying to steer them in any way. And actually, if I'm trying to steer somebody, it usually doesn't go well.
I love that. And I feel like that kind of shows a little bit of the nuance too of you having the Sphinx 2 and your Sun Gate being in Gate 2, and it really being about initiating people into a new direction, you know? And it sounds like through that experience of your friend, you initiated them into that direction, but it was also with that Gate 7, the guidance being invited in, being recognized before you could actually have that impact on somebody.
Yeah. I mean, a big part of how I understand the cross is through the sort of mental understanding of like what those gates mean. And the Sphinx Cross, you know, you've got gates 1 and 2, like that first polarity even that one is a little hard to wrap your head around. And like, you know, Rudd in his writings talks about six yang lines versus six yin lines and what this really means and like which one really came first. There's some interesting history if you want to get into a kind of feminist conversation about that. But the one and the two being in the individual circuit and being right in the middle of the G sector, like these are the parts that kind of start to make sense to me. And there was like a keynoting exercise that one of my teachers took me through. And she's like, you know, your sun is what's coming out, but you have to be grounded in the earth. And then you have to look at these, you know, unconscious, like these design side gates. And this is where your body is, you know, really expressing itself, but where you also won't be conscious of it. And so understanding those keynotes, like 13 line four is my design sun. And the keynote there is fatigue. And I had to kind of laugh when I read that because I was very fatigued in my life. But then the more I have understood, like the more I've seen how that dynamic plays out in my life, I'm like, oh my God, I do get fatigued maintaining this network. And I do hit a wall where I have to withdraw. You know, that's one of those like roll gate keynoting gates. So a lot of the line four imagery, symbolism, like all the ideas about the line four, like gate 13 and gate seven are really central in that. And that gate seven leadership, like the seven is not really the leader. The seven is like the assistant to the regional, you know, like it's more of a Dwight.
But that, yeah, it was called like the power behind the throne, right? Yeah.
Yes. And in my former life, I was working in like high-end fashion in retail. And I would get promoted to like management jobs, and I always loved it best when I was second in command, like when I was the power next to power. Like, I don't want to be in charge, but I do want to kind of help steer and be able to like point out, this is what you're missing. This is what maybe you're not seeing. I mean, the future focus of logical circuitry in gate seven, and then the, you know, past focus of abstract circuitry in gate 13, like all of this now comes together in this other understanding where I'm like, oh, the nature of direction is like, through time, in a sense, when we're looking at the Sphinx, like we're really looking at direction in terms of where are we headed into the future and how do we project that trajectory through looking at our past and looking at these old stories, looking at the experiences that we've been through.
It is very much about time and looking to the past to help also steer our future direction. Because I think sometimes we can be so focused on the future direction, but we haven't learned the lessons of the past. We haven't taken the time to rest and reflect and actually integrate the experience before looking to the future direction. And that all has to be grounded in the now.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, I think that it is like this dynamic. It is alive every moment, like every now is different now. So as we're clicking through now, now, it is informed by a different cumulative past in every moment. And so like the integration is ongoing because I really see it as like a cycle of being in the now, calibrating, you know, where am I? Where am I headed? And what am I receptive to? Like that's kind of, I mean, gate two, line one sun, receptivity, you know, what are we receptive to? And how does that connect to this idea of like the magnetic monopole and how we're being pulled through life? Everything is through receptivity. So what are we open to in the now based on what I think is going to happen in the future and what I, you know, have learned from my experiences in the past? That's an ongoing conversation with myself and everyone in my life. Like it's always about that.
I love that. And I think it's also interesting to bring in, you know, some of the nuances of like you being a 1-4 and having innocence motivation, but then also having this incarnation cross, you know, that leadership archetype in gate seven, even though like we talked about the power behind the throne, but it's still a natural leader, a guide, you know, you're naturally initiating people into this direction. And yet you have this innocence motivation. So I would love to hear what your experience has been with those two things.
Oh, man. I mean, innocence motivation has been such a mental bugaboo. There has been so much mental chatter for me around, like, what does that mean? Am I doing it right? And I mean, I'm constantly bouncing back and forth between innocence and desire, right? The piece of innocence that makes the most sense to me is the idea of objectivity and the idea of having no agenda I take a deep breath as I say that, because it's like, yeah, that feels so much better for me to like not have an agenda, just be present, you know, just be present and open to whatever magic occurs in the moment. The innocence piece, it's really easy for me to overthink things in terms of giving objective feedback to people, because there's this sense that like, I want to soft pedal it for them. I want it to be, you know, I want it to be nice. I don't want it to come across as like, whatever, which is all, you know, not self stuff. But the 1-4, you know, this 1-4 profile is so foundational. It's so focused on safety. And so much of my like nervous system work is through that lens of like really understanding the depth and the like the level of safety that I need to feel in order for that objectivity to come through. I have to feel really, really safe with a person in order to be objective. If I'm telling them like what I think about something, especially if it's like a hot take or a, you know, tough conversation, it's less difficult in my work. And that, you know, that's because the energy exchange is so clear for me that I can just be like, well, this is what I see. But the 1-4 also, you know, it's like we learn something and then we just kind of take it in a whole, you know, like as a whole package, like, okay, that's true. I will move on from here with this package of truths. And I've just like understood it. And then if you find out later that that foundation wasn't solid, it is earth shattering and it's so dysregulating. So I see myself as being kind of methodical, almost plotting, like very slow in my process of learning about things. But once I get to that point where I feel like I, you know, I have the foundation, like I have a really solid, like, okay, I know this inside and out, then I can be so objective and it flows so easily. Yeah, the innocence and desire thing was such a mental trip. And these transitional profiles, like there's not a lot of us, you know, there's a lot more 1-3s than there are 1-4s. So it's just kind of harder to like find friends that have the 1-4 and talk to them about it.
Yeah. And I find it so fascinating that all of the bridge profiles are here to be innocent in their motivation. And I loved what you talked about of not having an agenda and that being able to create this objectivity. And I feel like that can also really support that gate 7 and gate 13. Like you said, being able to really listen to somebody. You can only really listen to somebody truly when you don't have an agenda, because otherwise it's like, I feel like you're filtering it through an agenda. Like, are you really listening to them deeply? And can you really guide them without an agenda? You know, I think that's really so key and what can potentially make you an incredible leader. But bringing in that first line in your profile, like you said, you need to first feel safe and have a solid foundation so that you can have that objectivity, you know, not coming from an agenda, and share innocently, even if that might mean, especially like having an undefined solar plexus, having some confrontation, speaking your truth, but it's not coming from an agenda. It's really just an innocent place. And that's really where you can be the best guide and help direct people, you know, when you're coming from that space.
I have a couple of friends who have different bridge profiles. And what I've noticed about like a 6-3, I have a sister who's a 6-3. And so she's innocent. And her innocence is not the same as mine. Mine is like, but what does it mean? But what is it? I'm like down here in the sub basement, like sifting through facts, looking for all this detailed information. Her 6-3 innocence is like, been there, done that, survived it, leave me out of it. She will tell you the facts, but it's also like she has been through it. So like her innocence is this sort of objective retelling of like, these are all the ways that it can go wrong. It is what it is. My 1-4 feels so much more diagnostic. I mean, like the work that I do is so focused on body systems. And so it is really clinical. It's like, well, it could be this, it could be potassium, it could be magnesium. I'm delivering objective feedback, but in a totally different kind of frequency, you know?
Yeah. And you also being splenic, very much being about that physical body and, you know, the relationship to health and vitality and all of that. So yeah, you can kind of start to see all of these things come together. And that's why even just the profile, you know, we have like the incarnation cross and then we have the different version, but then we also have the profile. But then even below that, we have these colors, and all of that just gives this different nuanced lens of how it can be expressed. So your experience as a Sphinx is totally different being a 1-4, but then also, you know, would be different than a 1-3 who might have guilt or hope or any of the other colors below that. And like you said, the 6-3, of course, that 6 line is going to have more resonance with the 6 color below it. I experienced that being a 6 line profile, but I have a 3rd color below it. So I'm opposite, you know, I'm desire motivation. And I feel a resonance with innocence because I'm a 6 line up on the roof and I'm like, no, I'm good. I don't want to get involved. And yet I have that pull from my motivation. Nope, we're still here to get involved and get locked into things. And so, yeah, there's just so many of these nuances, which is why I love having these conversations, because we really get to see the differentiation of it all.
Yeah, that desire motivation for me, it's like I start thinking, I know what's best. I know what's right. I have made the decision for you. And then I start pushing. And it's like that, you know, it's that icky projector thing. Like I can see it in the other person if I start pushing in that way. And it feels gross in my body for me to be like, well, this is how it is. Like, I want you to work on this first. That sounds gross coming out of my mouth. And like, it's so much more comfortable for me to like, tell me everything. And then I'll hear something. And it really, you know, in my mind, it's like, it's so much about the listening through that gate 13. Like, it's an interesting one to be labeled listening, since it's not one of the gates that's like keynoted for hearing. And it makes me think about like the nature of listening, like listening with your whole body, taking it in visually, you know, vibrationally. But when I'm receptive, you know, when I'm listening with my whole body, I will hear something that the other person tells me. And it's like, that's the thread that we start pulling. Like, I'll you know, want to hear more about that. Or like you said something earlier about this thing that happened when you were a kid. Tell me more about that. And then that's where like we hook into something. And this idea of like being pulled along the track, it feels very present for me that through listening, through hearing the story, like I and the other person can start to unearth some truths. Like it becomes clear.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're just kind of intuitively feeling into that through your listening and knowing where to guide the conversation.
Yeah. Part of it is hard for me to separate from like my defined channels.
Yeah.
I don't know what's what. I don't know that, you know, it's not like I can isolate and be like, that's my 1333 right there.
And maybe it's all of it. Maybe it's a combination. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Like everything's happening all at once.
Yeah, right.
So 1333, like I have it. I know what's happening when people just start telling me their stories and I can like kind of opt into it. But there's these other things where like 1762 is defined for me. So there is a moment too where like something clicks mentally and I understand it. It makes logical sense. And I'm like, I know what we're doing.
Yeah, you start to spot the pattern because you also have the 4816. And so there's a lot of this logical energy also being able to spot the pattern too, right? So I'm sure part of the listening is also spotting those patterns.
100%. Yeah. The Sphinx is such an interesting cross. Like you've got Taurus and Leo and Aquarius and Scorpio. And those are some of the sort of visual archetypes that go into the visual of the Sphinx, right? Like this mammal body with wings and a woman's head, or, you know.
And it's all fixed energy in astrology, is, you know, that energy to be very determined, also passionate, but can also, with it being fixed, you can literally also be a little resistant to change, right? But, you know, in the right circumstances, that persistence can, you know, you have that determination to push through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, astrology has helped me understand this cross in a different way, in this like sort of mythological archetypal storytelling kind of way, which is a nice counterpoint to the logic of human design. And it's kind of a joke that like I'm a Sphinx and these are the things that I need to like understand things, but it is always like abstract and logic. But like the Taurus and Scorpio axis, I mean, if you think about like life and death, birth and death, like it makes so much sense. I have a Scorpio sister who is also a Sphinx. It's so clear how we are so similar and facing different directions in life, you know, like we are just oriented toward different archetypes. And that Leo energy, like that leadership energy, that big leadership energy that's fixed. I mean, I've played that role in jobs for sure, where I had to stand up and kind of be a figurehead. It's not comfortable for me, but I understand how other people have seen it in me and sort of, you know, called me into roles where I didn't necessarily see myself as a leader, but whatever I was bringing was required for a time. And then that seven, like that gate seven, line four, that's my, what is that? Design Earth. And the keynote there is abdication. And that's another one that made me laugh, because there are so many examples in my life where I'm like, I'm fighting the good fight. I'm trying to lead my team. And then I hit the wall. And I'm like, I am out. I'm so done with this. Somebody else be in charge, because I'm done. And I get pissy about it. You know, it's like the fatigue and abdication.
Yeah, the fatigue of the 13. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like there's so much bitterness in that too, you know, usually because I'm pushing too hard.
And I wonder if that's also maybe going to the other side, the two and the one, and that individual nature. It's like, is that connected to you maybe not following your individual direction or abdicating too much towards the collective rather than balancing the collective and the individual? And, you know, that's kind of also this cross is like two collective gates, two individual gates, and that balance, you know?
And none of that, like, there's no tribal circuitry in the G center.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting one, you know? There's that pure individual weirdo in me that doesn't want to do anything that has been done before, like wants to be a total original, and gets so depressed and sad when I can't deliver that, or when I can't like be in that creative space.
Or maybe when you're not seen and recognized in that way, you know, like seen for your individuality and your uniqueness. And yeah.
Oh my God. Like the number of times, like I've been on a date where somebody says, oh, you remind me of somebody else. I'm like, we're done. But like, yeah, there's individuality. And so there's this like who I am when I'm by myself. But then there's also like we have these collective roles, like leadership. My teens and 20s and most of my 30s were spent like obsessing about what am I going to be when I grow up? What direction am I supposed to go in? Like, I don't know. I still don't know. I have no idea. I have no plan. And now that I understand that it's just about being in the moment, it's so much more comfortable for me to be like, it's all going to work out. Like, everything's going to be fine. I don't need to know what my destiny is. I don't need to know what my karma is. Because nothing correct is going to happen unless I'm just like in the moment right now. But the torture I did to myself trying to figure out my direction. I mean, you know, the whole like getting ready to go to college, like all those conversations. What are you going to be? What are you going to do? I can't answer any of those questions for myself. And that's the irony of things. It's like, we don't know for ourselves. We're out here bumping into other people, impacting their direction. And I don't think any of us know where we're going at all.
I think that's kind of the joke about this whole incarnation cross is like, we think that it's going to give us some like laid out purpose and plan, but it really doesn't. And I hope that that's also through these conversations to illuminate that, because I think we spend so much time searching for our purpose when maybe our purpose is just to live each moment. Like maybe we're already living our, like maybe the purpose yeah. is right now what we're doing in this moment, and it's not anything else. And, you know, to also see that even if you don't understand your incarnation cross, it's most likely already living out in your life in many different ways, you know?
Yes. Like it's already happening. I feel like the whole first year and a half of my experiment, meeting human design, I was going to get to the bottom of this incarnation cross business. I was going to figure out what my life purpose was, and I'm going to like make it happen. God, what a waste of time. It was like these tortured little like writing prompts, and I did all these exercises and I just couldn't like figure it out. And to be honest, it's like, I kind of just gave up. It's not like I had this big epiphany where I was like, ah, I understand it. Now I can live my design. I was like, I have to just like treat it like an actual experiment and just see if I notice evidence along the way. But really, I just have to live my life, you know, like if it comes right down to it and I'm being really honest, like strategy and authority is really only part of it for me. Because invitations for projectors, like they're so few and far between. So much of it for me is just about following my spleen in the moment. And so that's kind of part of, you know, hooking into that, like, all I can really do is be present right now. My spleen is keeping me safe right now. Everything's going to be fine as long as I'm paying attention right now.
I love that. And I feel like that's also very connected to the higher aspects of gate two. And, you know, the second gene key, it's like that gift of orientation in the city of unity. And one of the things that I love that Richard Rudd talks about in that gene key is like, you can never make a wrong decision. Even if you feel the shadow is a dislocation, and it's kind of like this feeling of being lost and lacking direction and not knowing where you're going. And I kind of feel like we can do that when we're so wrapped up in trying to find our purpose, instead of just trusting in, you know, gate two is the magnetic monopole. So it's just trusting that our life is attracting to us exactly what we need to fulfill our purpose in the moment, in the now. And we just have to be open and receptive to that. And a lot of times what blocks that is the mind's projections of what we should be or what it should look like. And, oh, it should be so, you know, nicely wrapped in a bow. And I just have this clarity of this is who I am and this is my purpose. And it's so interesting too, because you have a defined G center. And like you said, it's still, hey, I'm still figuring it out. And I think for me, as somebody with an undefined G center, that's so like a relief, because it's like, yeah, we're all just fucking figuring it out, man. Like nobody really knows.
I don't know anything. Like the Richard Rudd thing, like the unity, dislocation, and then the magnetic monopole. And I always come back to this idea of like the illusion of separateness, like the illusion that you and I are separate, the illusion that I am separate from my body. Like, what is the I that is talking about my body? It's all the same thing. We are all the same thing. And I think that the blue line in the Ray of I Ching for gate two, line one is about beauty. The nature of direction is we're moving towards beauty. What? Like, that was such a mind fuck for me at the beginning. And I was so, I mean, I felt untethered from my life. I met human design in the ramp up to my Uranus opposition. So I was like living a dumpster fire and then reading all these esoteric keynotes. Like, what are you even talking about? I felt completely untethered from anything. Like I was just floating in space, like that Sandra Bullock movie where she's just floating. And there really isn't anything to hook into, if I'm being honest. Like the only, I keep coming back to it, but it's like, if I'm just present right now, I can feel that I'm breathing. I feel that I'm in my body, feel connected to you. And it's like, this is what's happening. This is what's happening. This is the only thing that matters.
And trusting in, like really learning to trust in that and surrender to that, I feel like that is the work, you know, like we always talk about the work. And I'm like, that's really what it is it's like facing, seeing when the mind tries to come in and like, you know, convince us that it's not safe and that like it is about something else, you know, in the future or in the past. And yes, those things are also important. But like you said, really right now is all we have. And if we can just trust in that, trust in the power of the magnetic monopole, it's easy to talk about, but it's hard to actually embody and integrate. And that's really where the work comes in.
Yeah. I mean, gate two, like if you look at the G center, gate two is pointing down toward the sacral. And I forget where I saw this, but someone was talking about, like, they were keynoting all the gates of the G center and behaviors. And gate two is pointed toward the sacral. And so it was keynoted as fertile behavior, productive behavior, receptive or responsive behavior. And so, like, gate two being the monopole and being all about receptivity to beauty. And it's waiting for that energy from the sacral. And so it is in essence just responding to life, right?
Yeah.
And one pointing toward the throat, like creativity manifesting in the throat, we have to speak it out. Like there are so many cool ways to look at how this energy moves through the chart too, you know? But like, I mean, the real thing for me was trusting that I was going to figure it out, you know, trusting that like, it's okay to be present right now. I don't have to be so like future focused because I'm afraid of what's going to happen. I don't have to be obsessing on my past because I still don't know what it all meant. But the trust piece in the now is so much about discernment and so much about like being connected to my authority. I can mentally wrap my head around, I trust that I will be able to navigate this, whatever happens. And it's easy to say that. But then when you're in the moment of like, oh shit, it's so easy to be like, I don't know what to do. And there was a moment for me where I was like, oh, no, I know what my body's saying right now. And the trusting the process is all for me through that connection to the body and feeling like I have a rock solid relationship with my spleen. I know what my authority is. And even if it looks like the outcome is like not ideal, there's going to come a point where I look back on it and I go, oh, that's what was happening. And so, you know, it's these archetypes. Like I can plan for the future as much as I want. And I can think I have my past figured out completely. And then as I move through different moments, different experiences, I'm constantly reassessing both of those things. I'm like, oh, that didn't mean what I thought it meant. There's this other layer that I can take out of it now. And oh, the future looks different now because I know all this different stuff now. So plans are different and I'm not attached to the plan.
I love that too. Also thinking about how like the individual circuitry is the energy of the now, but also the energy for like mutation and change and transformation, and how the now is always changing and transforming and will be different from moment to moment.
Yes. And like, depending on what you're looking at.
Yeah.
You know, like you and I can look at the exact same thing. Like there's that metaphor about like, you know, blind men touching an elephant, you know, and they're all blindfolded and they're trying to describe it. And it's like,
yeah.
Like one guy's touching the leg and it's like, okay, I found a trunk. This is definitely a tree trunk. But like, it's definitely not a tree trunk. It's an elephant leg, you know, but it just speaks to perspective and like how we come into contact with things and how we're relating to things.
Absolutely. And each person having a different view, a different perspective, a different way that they're designed to take in and also make sense of reality. It's so different. Like I've been contemplating that a lot recently, just in my relationship with my parents and having this realization, like I knew it, but it's also just been a new experience to see how I'm literally living a reality, thinking things are one way. And they have a totally different reality. And I'm just like, oh, okay. I think I'm living the truth and I'm seeing it in the right way, but they're totally taking it in totally differently and then seeing it. And I'm like, okay, so what is actually true? Like maybe it all is. I think sometimes for the mind, we want to be able to like make it so black and white, but there's so much of this gray. And that's what I feel like also human design can teach us is like how to embrace that complexity and that nuance and holding multiple perspectives and truths at the same time.
Yeah. So much of the last like 4 years for me has been like the question that pops up in my mind is it this or is it this? Like I've got true, false, A or B. And then the reality, like the lived experience, whatever, it's both of those things, plus a weird third thing, and a bunch of shit that I didn't expect. And whatever I think about it right now is going to change, like, you know, have a different understanding about it in a week or a month or a year or whatever. And like the binary, you know, like that all of these binaries in human design, and yet nothing is black and white. Everything is about the gray area.
Yeah, I think we're seeing that right now in the human design community with this conversation of pop HD versus source material and these false binaries where it's like, it's both things and it's a combination and it's this third thing and it's maybe some things we haven't considered, and being able to also hold that space for all of that, I think, is a practice that takes time, but also, you know, we can see human design can really be a tool to support that if you're open to it.
Totally. The pop versus source conversation, it was funny. I was talking to a friend of mine, like that conversation kind of came up in the HD space that I was paying attention to a few times in my like, you know, relationship with human design. And I was noticing that I was less reactive to it this time around.
Yeah, same.
Where I was like, oh, and then like Kat, where it was basically like, last time I had stuff to say and this time I don't give a fuck. And I was rolling. I'm like, that's exactly where I am. Like,
yeah.
I mean, I don't like being policed in my own comments. I made a big stink about that in my stories a while ago. I don't enjoy HD purists or the HD police coming in and trying to lock us into Roz keynotes from 1987 or whatever. Because I mean, I think it's bad logic. I think it's just kind of dumb. we can't freeze this system as it was when it was delivered to him for many reasons. I mean, that's not the nature of a system that's all about individuation and differentiation and change and evolution. It's supposed to take us into the future. Like, why do we want that?
And it really just becomes a dogma and a religion. And
100%. And it's like constitutional originalists. We've got like religious conservatives who want to, you know, talk about the letter of the text, you know, and they want to get really locked into like, well, I know what they meant. And this is the only interpretation that's allowed. And the fundamental irony of it is like, Ra was just the dude. Kip has been very vocal about telling us that Ra was just the dude on acid who downloaded this whole thing. So like, let's take a big deep breath and a grain of salt and whatever else and like, allow it. I'm at Human Design through Karen Craig Parker, which, and like, she's not as poppy as some of the pop, like what I would call pop, but she's not Source, you know, she's
but she also has been dragged through the mud, I think, from the purists and even Richard Rudd. And, you know, I have found so much value from both of them. And yeah, it's so interesting to witness because I totally in the past have gotten very like on one side or the other. And now I'm just like, okay, I can witness it. I'm not really feeling as triggered. I find it kind of amusing in a way. to witness it and to see the different takes. And I'm also enjoying the different takes because I'm like, oh, that's an interesting perspective. That's, yeah, let's bring in this. Let's bring in this voice. Like, I'm very much more like, I want to hear the different perspectives because I know, especially with having a defined head in Ajna, sometimes I can only see it one way. And I need to intentionally take in other perspectives so that I can maintain an open mind instead of becoming really fixed, which I've seen myself do in the past. So yeah, I think even just being able to witness that, it's like you can start to see your own evolution, you know, in just the way that you relate to the system.
Yeah, absolutely. The pop HD, I think what people are upset about is the monetization of human design and all the different forms that that's taking and all the different stuff that comes up for any of us around money. I don't even want to say like the woo-woo keynotes, but, you know, like we get all up in our heads about money and how much money there is going around and whether or not we're getting paid enough or somebody else is getting paid for something. Like the only human design content I'm even interested in taking in is where someone is talking about their lived experience through this lens. Those are the accounts. Those are the people that I want to talk to. That's the content I want to look at where it's like personal. Because I feel like there's so much value in the lived experience. And probably is my gate 13 talking, like that's probably a big part of it. But there's that individual piece too, where it's like, I don't need anyone else to like re-explain the keynotes to me. As a 1-4, I'm very good at studying that stuff and figuring it out on my own. Like I'm probably better versed in most of it than a lot of people. But that personal experience stuff, when people talk about like just being a second line, what's that like? You know, just having guilt motivation. What's that like? I love that stuff.
Yeah.
That's really understand like how it shows up in real life. And that to me is the most compelling part.
Yeah. I'm much more interested now in like the nuances of it instead of just hearing the regurgitated definitions. It's like, okay, but how does that, like we've been talking about in this conversation, how does you with your particular definition and incarnation cross and profile and variable configuration, how does that all come together in your experience? And for me, that's so much more interesting than just hearing about a splenic projector or, you know, like, you know, like to me, type and strategy and authority almost even has been like, okay, but how are you actually living it? Where are the nuances and how that actually shows up in your day-to-day life?
And like, even taking that a step further where people are like, hey, it was a little not self. I'm like, tell me all of that. That's what
I mean.
Like the funny, like when I'm being bitter, when I'm bitter and pissed off and I've like run out of fake sacral energy, that's when the keynotes are so true that it is laughable. And that's the stuff, like those are the moments that I want to hear about and talk about because it's just funny.
Yeah, actually, it's interesting. The last time I witnessed this was in relationship to the gene keys, because I was seeing a lot of people who have never really like learned from Richard Rudd or taken a course, and they're just regurgitating this information. And I got like really triggered. And later that week, I was reading about a particular face of the Godhead. And the Godhead is all about this solar programming that gets us pulled into the not self. And it was all about maintaining fundamentalism and things needing to be a certain way. And I saw that and I was like, oh, here I was getting pulled into that. And I thought that was so much more amusing to see. Oh, wow. I was just getting pulled by this solar programming, this face of the Godhead that's activated now, that pulled out this aspect. And I just went with it. And it shit happens. It happens. But like the awareness of that, I was like, I only would have learned that through doing it the non-self way and witnessing it and being like, ah, okay, now I know.
Like witnessing it. And I mean, like, okay, so we're in the Rave New Year, right? Gate 41, initiator codon. Q1 starts with gate 13. Gate 13 is the witness. Like everything is about witnessing. Like that to me is the lesson of the Sphinx. It's like, what are the things that we are here to do? Witness. That's where we start, and then be receptive, and then lead, and then die. I mean, Scorpio is like everything, like the direction is death, you know,
for that. Yeah. And that's what's so interesting about the fourth quarter too, when you study it through the Godheads, is it's all about like that space, filling up that space between death
the
and like
yes.
Totally. Yeah.
Legacy. Like,
yeah,
it's so interesting to see how these archetypes play out in life, and then how. Yeah, like witnessing myself, thinking about the stuff. I'm like, why am I thinking about legacy? What am I, what? And then I look at the transits and it's like, oh, okay. Yeah.
And I think that's, again, like learning to trust, because it's like,
yes,
these cosmic influences, all of this, it's all impacting it. And if we can just trust and be receptive to it, we can really experience the magic of what life is all about. So my final question, bringing it back to your incarnation cross, I'd love to hear what your biggest insight or aha moment has been related to your incarnation cross or, you know, these particular gates.
Oh gosh. I mean, the aha for me was that my incarnation cross is not for me, and I don't have to consciously do anything about it. I don't have to like work it. I don't have to figure it out. It's just like a side effect. It's going to happen and maybe I'll notice it. But that has been the aha. It's like figuring it out mentally is not going to make it any better. It's not going to mean anything. But truly, like, what is the nature of identity? What is the nature of love? What is the nature of direction? Like all these things are housed together. And for me, the only thing that's true is like, if I'm present right now, then I'll be okay. Like I can trust whatever happens. As long as I'm present in the now, but the rest of it is just mind game. And like, sometimes I'll notice it, but I don't know if that's like super deep or specific to the Sphinx. I feel like I want to deliver something really quickly for you. But the truth is,
no, like, I think that's great. Cause I think that is wisdom from somebody with a defined G center. That's also like, you don't have to have it all perfectly clear and laid out and like know all the steps and know exactly where you're going. I don't know. There's just this idea of purpose. I feel like, you know, for me with having an undefined G center, I also have gate 28 four times in my chart, and like the shadow of 28 is purposelessness. And like, I feel like that undefined G center purposelessness, I'm like, where am I going? What is my purpose? What is my big thing? And being a six line too, like hearing, oh no, you're not going to find it until after you're 50. I was like, what? And now I'm like, well, maybe. So I don't have a purpose until after 50. It's like, no, maybe it's just really your purpose is right now. It's being alive. It's embracing every moment, witnessing, like you said, being able to, you know, slow down enough to actually witness life unfolding and pick up on those patterns. And, you know, I think all of that is part of the process. So I actually think it's, especially for me with having an undefined G center, I'm like, okay, nobody has it figured out. I don't think anybody is really clear on their quote unquote purpose. It's just being alive.
Yeah, I think that is the whole point. The purpose is being present, you know, like that's the whole point. Nobody has it figured out. And the idea that like purpose and direction and love and identity and all these things like reside together, they're just like sides of a coin. It's all the same thing. We overthink it because it's important, you know, like it's important. It's precious, this life, and we want to get it right. But I think the reality is like we miss all the good stuff when we're thinking about it too much. You know, that's the whole thing with human design is like live in your body, be in your body right now.
Yeah, it's like maybe our whole purpose and direction and identity really is love and loving life, loving ourselves, loving others, being love, you know, maybe that's really just what it's all about.
Oh, totally. I mean, the lessons of the Sphinx Gates are like, be receptive, truth is beauty, and then listen, be a witness and lead. But it's not like top-down leadership. It's like the hand, you know, the hands to the king or the hand of the queen.
Yeah, and also needing to be given that power, being recognized, being invited, not just assuming that role and that power. Yeah.
It is democratic leadership. It's not that ego stuff. It's not that like tit for tat, quid pro quo kind of leadership. Like true leadership, I mean, G-Center leadership is different. You know, it's just different. And gate one is, I mean, it says it's the creative, but it's just about timing. That's all it's about. It's literally about timing and waiting for the melancholy to pass and like waves of creativity. Like,
yeah, learning to embrace that too. I have gate one and it's been like, I thought for so long I had depression and I'm like, maybe it's not actually depression. Maybe it's just melancholy. And like, hey, sometimes I just go through these periods where I'm just down and I'm not feeling that zest for life. And like, can you actually learn to embrace that? And yeah, just trusting in that whole process.
Giving yourself permission to just rest, to just be in that melancholy and not try to force it. Like that is my last 12 months. It's like, I thought I knew how to give myself permission to rest. And then this year I keep hitting these periods where I'm like, whoa, I really need to rest. And the tension.
I mean, and that's so hard too, being in a capitalist society.
Oh my God.
I've been contemplating that too, of like, man, it's so hard to really embrace our true nature in a lot of ways because there is so much pressure to make money so we can just survive, you know? Yeah.
And I mean, there's all this conditioning for like defying sacrals that like work is supposed to be something for you guys. And like, we kind of get a pass. Like I'm a projector, you know, non-sacrals. It's like, oh, we're not here to work. But it's like, man, the amount of rest that I think we all need post-pandemic. I mean, the global environment is so nuts. And part of being present for me has been like, wow, there is no energy. I just have to rest. Like that has been, that's been the big unglamorous lesson of this year.
Yeah. I hear that from a lot of sacrals too. And I even experienced that last year of like, just not really being lit up by much, not really having that sacral energy. And it was like, but I'm told that I should. And that I like, you know, then it's like, you think you're doing something wrong. And it's like, no, maybe it also is, we all need to learn to rest and to like, you know, honor that. And if there's not that sacral, yes, if there's not that sacral energy, that's also an indicator right there, you know, like, hey, maybe it's also time to pull back and to rest and wait for that energy to come.
And like allow things to integrate, even when we consciously like, you know, control it or be aware of it or understand it in the moment. Like there's, that background integration thing where it's like, I don't know, but it's just not done. The bread's not done baking yet. I can't tell you why, but it's just like not done.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's all I think, again, part of that embodiment process that's really ongoing.
I mean, I feel like I have leveled up in so many areas of my life, but I have a deeper sense of how much more there is to do or how much more like releasing, deconditioning, like we're never going to be done. The whole thing is about the process.
Yeah. And maybe again, that's our purpose and just falling in love with that process.
Yeah. And like that and the messiness and the weirdness and the chaos. Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. I am deeply human and messy. And it's fine.
Yeah. It's beautiful. Fine. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love it. Well, thank you so much, Karen, for being here and for really setting the direction for this next season of the podcast. I really have enjoyed this conversation and know that it will be impactful for those who listen. So where can everyone find you, learn about the work that you're doing, all of the things?
So you can find me on Instagram at Human Design Sphinx, perfect for today's podcast. And I have a website, KarenTrilley.com. And I'm available for like coaching. I do some teaching. Like I've got some classes that I'm cooking up for this year, more biology. And then I do one-on-one client work too. And you can book all of that on my website.
Amazing. And I'll put those links in the show notes for everyone. Thank you again, Karen, so much for being here. It's been such a pleasure.
Thank you. I loved it.
Me as well. Aloha. Thank you so much for sharing a piece of your day with me. If you found value in the podcast and want to support the creation of future episodes, it would mean so much if you made a contribution of $5 to $10 to the podcast. This podcast survives on your contributions and every amount is greatly appreciated. You can also rate and review the podcast on whichever platform you listen from. This helps get the podcast out to more people who could benefit from this information. I believe that human design and gene keys should be knowledge that we all have access to. So if this episode resonated with you, it would mean so much to me if you shared it with someone you love. If you would like to connect with me further, follow me on Instagram at @IamRandyLee. Feel free to send me a message on Instagram, send me an email, or join my free community, Embodiment by Design, where I have a ton of free resources to support you in your human design and gene keys experiment. Thank you for being a part of this community and for your commitment to embodying your authentic self. I see you. I recognize the inner work that you are doing. It never goes unnoticed. Until next time, Soul Family, stay uplifted.